We left off on last Sunday on the Gemara in Chatam and Aleph, and we were still in the middle of discussing the issue of davening, saying Kriyat Shema in the presence of waste, particularly human waste. So now the Gemara is going to turn its attention to when is it that it's not a problem anymore. But presumably a person, let's say a person urinates in a certain place, and it eventually it's going to dry up. It's going to get absorbed or it's going to evaporate or something like that. And the question, and the same thing for feces, which at a certain point, if it becomes so dry, it might as well just be dirt. So the question is, what is that point at which we say that it is no longer considered mei raglayim or tsoa, urine or feces, for the purposes of kriya shema and tefila? So the Gemara that we've just spoken about, the moving pig, we're now, it's sort of like in the, almost smack in the middle of the page, smack in the middle of the medium width lines. There are two dots, three words into the line, Amara Papa, right after Pikazi Ketsoa Verasami. So on the next line, Amar Rav Yehuda. So, Amar Rav Yehuda, Safek Shoa Babayis Muteres.
I'm so sorry, could you tell me what page, because I have only a Hebrew one here.
Chatham et Aleph.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Amar Rav Yehuda, Safek Shoa Babayis Muteres, Ba'ashva Asura. If you have a question whether or not there is tsoa, where there's feces present, and you're in a house where people typically don't leave that, then it's mutter to daven. Whereas if you have a question, you're near an ashva, you're near a garbage dump, and going back to an exchange I had, I think I forgot who it was with, about the question of the sanitation in the time of the Gemara. And really, what was it like? So I actually did, I don't know how I came across this very odd video about latrines in the Roman era. And many of us, I think, would, if you happen to chance upon various materials in Shas, it starts to ring bells. What would people do with often if you didn't use these latrines, which themselves seem pretty vile? They were public latrines, many of them, occasionally private ones. So some people would just take the chamber pot, that's what they would use, and they would dump it out the window. Now, some of you, this may sound familiar to you, because they, in this article, they talk about what if someone was passing by underneath, had the misfortune of being there when someone dumped the pot. Assuming the pot didn't accidentally slip out of your hands, which could really hurt them. So, I don't know, does that ring a bell for anybody?
Haman.
You got it. Haman. That's the measure of Haman. Haman returns to his house, Avel Vachoy Rosh, because his daughter, according to the Medrash, I think it's the Gemara in Megillah, and Daf Yomi did it not so long ago. So his daughter saw somebody pulling somebody on a horse and assumed, of course, the somebody pulling must have been Mordechai and the somebody in the horse must have been Haman. So she dumped the chamber pot on the guy pulling the horse. And then when she realized it was her father, she jumped off the building and killed herself. And that's why Haman returns to his house, Avel v'chafui rosh. So I'm just reading this, and there's another story about someone having the unfortunate incident of being bitten by a snake while using one of these public latrines. And there's a comment that you have this in the Gemara as well. It's kind of like, oh yes, that was the world that they actually occupied. So here we have an ashpa where I guess a more communal place they would dump garbage of various kinds. And if you're not sure whether there's tsoa there, it is asura. In fact, I think that when this is quoted at some point in Shulchan Aruch, it's said that if a person davened in a house and they didn't realize there was tsoa there, after the fact, the d'eved, the davening is good. But if they did it in an ashva, and they didn't check, and there was tsoa there, so then they have to daven again. The tefillah is a toeva. It's an abomination, meaning it's not halachically valid, because obviously they should have, it's a place where you expect it to be. And this will, I think, become clear from the next line in the Gemara as well. So then the Gemara says that, so Rabbi Yehuda says, safek tsoa asura, and safek mei raglayim amutarim. If you're not sure whether there's excrement, it's usur to daven. If you're not sure whether there's urine there, it's mutar. But then ikat amri, this is what I'm referring to. Amar Rav Yehuda, safek tsoa babayis muteres and ba'ashpa asura. So the safek in the bayis is mutar. In the ashpa, it's usur. Safek mei raglayim afil ba'ashpa nami mutarim. But if it's only a question whether it's mei raglayim, whether there's urine there, so that's permissible even in the ashpa. So why? If it's based upon a likelihood of it being there, so Mei Raglayim should be no different than Tsoa. right? You assume that in the house, in both cases, it's not likely it's there. And in the ashpa, you expect that it would be there. So the Gemara explains immediately, Savar laki hada amar hamuna, the amar hamuna lo asra Torah ala keneged amud bohat. So we've mentioned this before. Rav Hamnuna's position is that midah oraisa, it is only prohibited to engage in dvarim shebekdusha in the presence of meiraglayim, in the presence of urine, keneged ha'amud, means when the person's actually urinating. You know, between the time it leaves their body and it hits the ground. But once already it has hit the ground and it's no longer connected to the person, so then it's only a rabbinic prohibition of reciting, engaging in dvarim shebekdusha in the presence of that urine. Whereas when it comes to tzor, when it comes to feces, it doesn't make a difference. Even when it's just there, it's aser. Hence, the suffix, we're more machmir on the suffix of tzor, because that's a sveika de oraisa versus the suffix of meiraglayim, the questionable case of meiraglayim. You're not talking about a person actually urinating. Your question is there meiraglayim there? And since the prohibition of reading kriyashma, davening, would only be midirabbanan if the urine were actually there, the suffix, the doubtful case is now regarded as a sveika de rabbanan, and therefore it is not, it is permitted. Now, how do we know that there's actually a difference between the two? So I guess, and we've mentioned this in passing, I don't know if I've formulated as directly as this, how do we know that it's a problem of reciting Dvarim Shebekdusha in the presence of human waste? In the presence of waste in general, but specifically human waste. So the answer to that question, which we've mentioned, the parasha of Nuchama. The parasha of Nuchama, that the Torah says that when you go out to war, your machane has to be kadosh, and you have to have a place outside the machane, that's where you go as your latrine, and you bring a yaseid, some type of a peg or a trowel with which you dig and you cover that which comes out of you. So the Gemara here makes the following point. Ucha the Rav Yonasan. The Rav Yonasan Ramiksev. Rav Yonasan perceived a contradiction between two of the verses in that section in Torah. How so? The first thing the Torah tells us is v'yod tielacha, yad means a place. You have to have a place outside the machane, and that's where you go out when you need to do what you need to do. Uksiv, but then it says v'yasei tielacha l'azeinecha. Your clay zion, your toolkit, you also have to have a trowel. Why? Because v'chapartaba v'shafta. You have to cover up that which comes out of you. So why is it, now the way he's reading the Pesukim, on the Pshat level, there's no contradiction here. It's just a stage. First, that you have to have a place. And then when you go to that place, you use your trowel to cover up your waste. However, he's seeing it as really two different things. The first one is, all you need is a separate place. You don't do it inside the machane. But then the Torah says, sometimes you have to cover up that which comes out of you. So how do you resolve whether you do or don't have to? When is it enough just to go outside the machane versus when do you actually have to cover it? So the answer is hakesat tan v'gedolim tan v'ketan. When this is the case where you have to cover it is dealing with gedolim, which is feces, and the case where you just need to do it outside because while you're urinating, that's kenegra amud. So that is ketan. That is urine. So lo asra Torah ela kenegra amud bilvad, but ha nafula la'ara. Once the urine literally falls on the ground, Shari is permitted to daven there to say Kriya Shema there min HaTorah, the Rabbanon hu degasur b'hu. But it's the Chachamim who said that even in the presence of stationary urine, not on the fly, it is prohibited. But the Chigazru b'hu Rabbanon, when did the Rabbanon make a decree prohibiting that? The Vadon only when there's definitely urine there, avo b'sveikon lo gosur. If there's a doubt, so then they didn't go that far to be stringent. So now the Gemara has actually established an important fundamental difference between these two. So now the question becomes, all right, what is the standard? How long is it there when it's still a problem? So now the Gemara says, ubiva da'on ad kama. How long does the urine remaining there, how long does it continue to be a problem? So Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, kol zman shematpicha. The word, I don't know what its exact origin is, but the word tofeach or matpiach in rabbinic Hebrew often means to be damp or to be moist or to make something wet. So kozman shemat pichim, like imagine sometimes you have, let's say, a washcloth, which has water in it, but if you touch it and you take your hand away, your hand is not wet. There's not going to be any detectable moisture on your hand. But you touch it, you can sense that it's so moist. Sometimes you touch the washcloth, it's so moist that your hand has liquid on it. You can sense that. So when you can actually sense that liquid by touching it, that's called matpiach. So he says, kozman shematpich. And then, v'chein, amar rabba barbarchana or rabbi yochanan, kozman shematpich. V'chein, amar ula, kozman shematpich. So three different amaram here. Shmuel, rabbi yochanan, and ula, who's a little later, all say that the standard for urine being a problem to daven in the presence of, as long as it's matpiach. Geneva Mishmei de Rav, Geneva was an Amora, in the name of Rav said, he wasn't such a salutary figure. He was very smart, but he had character issues, the Gemara tells us elsewhere. So he said, in the name of Rav, Kosaman Shiri Shuman Nikar, as long as you can recognize, the impression is recognizable, which would mean some type of a stain. Geneva is being more stringent, he's being more machti. That's what he's quoting in the name of Rav. So the Gemara says, Gemara quotes, Amar Rav Yosef, Shara le Mara le Geneva. Geneva's master should forgive him. This is actually an expression that's found, it's used by the Amoraim as an insult, we might call it that way, four times in Shas. Three times it's Rav Yosef, and the other time it's his ostensibly student, Rava. And then they think something is wrong. I don't know why in these cases they say, Shara le Mara, his master should forgive him because he said something wrong. In this case, each time Rashi and Shas will explain it. Here he says, "Mechol lo ribono," his master should forgive him. Devadai sheker heid mishrei Rav. He testified falsely to him. Rav could never have said such a thing. Rav would never have said that kozman shirishuman nikar. It's very interesting that this expression appears one other place. It's in the name of Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak in the Gemara in Yoma. When the Gemara says, what's the definition of a Chilul Hashem? What's the definition of a Chilul Hashem? And one of the definitions that's offered by Nachman by Yitzchak is when his people say about him, Shara Le Mare, Lishre Le Mare, his master should forgive him. When a person behaves in a way that people so clearly recognize is so wrong, and that's the way people talk, that's the quintessential Chilul Hashem. Okay, so anyway, so Rabbi Yosef basically says he's absolutely wrong. So how does he know that? Hashta soa amar Rabbi Yehuda amar Rav kevan shekarmu panel mutar mei raglayim iboy. So Rabbi Yosef quotes Rabbi Yehuda quoting Rav saying that when you have feces, as soon as the surface of the feces is dry, right? Karmu paneha. It's a little unpleasant, but the association of krimas panim usually refers to crust on a bread. The krimas panim in a tanur. In an oven is when you put a dough in and when it crusts on the outside, that's called krimas panim. So when you have a crust, in effect, a hard surface on the feces, even though it might be soft on the inside and not crumbly on the inside, so Rav said that that's already mutter. So if that standard is mutter by soa, which we're much more stringent on, right? Soa is asur min ha-Torah, even when it's just sitting there. So mei raglayim, certainly, if it's dry on the outside, dry enough that you touch it, you don't become, you don't get wet at all. So just because Rishuman is Nikar, nobody's going to say that it's actually usur to say Kriyash Moradavid. So how could, with Geneva quote in the name of Rav, the standard by urine of Rishuman Nikar is usur, is prohibited, if Rav said that by Tsoa, Krimas Panim is enough, and crusting on the surface is enough to make it Mota. So Amar Le'abaye, this is five lines before they get wide, on Chafei Menal, Amar Lei Abaye, my choses to Sam Chasaha, Smochaha. Who told you to rely upon Rabbi Yehuda's citation of Rav, that the standard of Tsoa is Krimas Panim, the surface crusting? After all, Smochaha, rely upon the following statement. Amar, a different quotation of Rav. Instead of Rabbi Yehuda name of Rav, the Amar Rav Barakuna, Amar Rav, Tsoa Afilu Kecheres Asura. If you have excrement, even if it's like cheres, and I presume that means on the outside, even if it's like cheres, like pottery shards, nonetheless, it's still asura. Vehechi dami tzela kecheres. What is the point and up until which it's still asur? that is considered like Teres. Amar Rabba Babarhana Amar Rabbi Yochanan Kosman Shezorka Ve'inan Efreches. If you throw it and it doesn't crack into pieces, it's not dry enough to crack into pieces, that's called Kecheres, and it's Asur Tadavin there. And then there's a more stringent opinion, Ve'ika De Amar Kosman Shegola Ve'inan Efreches. In other words, if something dries to a certain point, if you roll it on the ground, it's still not going to crumble. If you throw it against the wall, it's going to crumble. So the second definition quoted in the name of the name of Yochanan of what it means, so a kecheres that is still prohibited, is if you roll it on the ground, even if you know that you throw it against the wall, it will crack up. If rolling it on the ground will not make it crack up, it's not dry enough yet, then it's still asur. Once you roll it on the ground and it's dry and it just starts to crumble, that already is mutter, even according to the most stringent opinion. So basically, what Abaye says to Rabbi Yosef is, why do you assume Geneva is wrong when he quotes Rav? Maybe because after all, you're making an analogy. He quotes Rav by urine, who says this is the standard by urine, and which is very high standard. And yet we know that Rabbi Yehuda quoted Rav talking about by Tsoa, by excrement, at the much lower standard for davening, and that can't be. It has to be either equal, or you have to be more stringent when it comes to excrement than urine. So Abaye's response to Yosef is, says who? Maybe Rav didn't say that. Maybe Rav was also stringent by Tzoah. He's also stringent by excrement, and with the Eva's position, is perfectly consistent with the way Rav Bar Avuna quoted Rav. Okay. So then, the Gemara continues, still discussing this issue. Amar Avina, Hava ko'ena kame de Rav Yehuda midifti. I was standing in the presence of Rav Yehuda midifti. Chazat soa. He saw excrement. Amarli, ayein ikarmu panel ila. He told me, at least according to the first version, go see, like Rav, review the name of Rav, whether or not the surface is dried out. Ikarmu panel. Ila or not? Ika da Amre, there's a different version of what Ravina said, Rabbi Huda Midifti said to him. Hachi Amarle, Ayein im Mifloi Afluye. Go see if there are cracks, if there are fissures, which is already drier. That's more like the stringent standard. Okay. So it's a machlokas. It's a machlokas. What is the halacha by Tsoa? What is the halacha by Meraglayim? Both by feces and urine, it's a question of how dried out does it have to be. So the Gemara asks, May hava Allah, the first wide line in the Gemara, the third word. May hava Allah, what was the conclusion? What was the conclusion? So Itamar, there was a statement made, Tsoa kacheres, with respect to Tsoa, which is Yavesh kacheres, Amemar Amar Asura, Umar Zutra Amar Muteres. So this is not very helpful because it still remains a machlokes. Amar Rava, this is the part that counts. Hilchasa, Tsoa kecheres asura, but umei raglayim kozman shemakpihem. So Rava adopts, in effect, the opposite position, the one that is at least internally logical or consistent. Rava says that the standard for Tsoa, if it's kecheres, it's still asur. According to Rava, we would say, you have to be able to roll it on the ground and it would crack up in order for it to be mutter. Or maybe you have to throw it against the wall and it would crack up. But something that's short of that, something that's short of that would in fact be prohibited. Whereas Mei Raglayim is only asur as long as a matpichim. But once it's no longer matpich, once touching it, your hand won't be moist. You can detect that it is a little bit moist, but you won't actually, your hand wouldn't become wet from it. So then it's mutter to daven by that Mei Raglayim. So the standards are not the same for the two, but Rava's position is conceptually possible because he's more stringent when it comes to excrement than he is when it comes to urine. So that's fine. Right? The problem that Rav Yosef had with Geneva is that he adopted a stringent standard for Rav by Tsoa when Rav Yosef thought that Rav had adopted a lenient standard. He adopts a stringent standard for Rav by urine, whereas according to Rav Yosef's tradition, Rav had adopted a more lenient stance when it came to excrement. Okay, so that's how Rav passed. So the Gemara says on toward the end of the second wide line, Meisve, Mei Raglayim Kozman Shematpichin Asurin, Nivlu'u Oyavshu Mutarin. So, at first glance, you're probably going to have a very hard time figuring out why this Braisa is a problem for Rava. Because the first line in the Braisa says exactly what Rava said. What gets to the Gemara, and it's odd, I don't know why the Gemara chooses to approach the Braisa this way, is the Gemara is going to first focus only on the second line in the Braisa, which is if the urine was absorbed or dried out. Rashi says Nivla'u means into the ground, and Yavshu means this is on top of stone, it dries out, it just evaporates. So if it's Nivlu or Yavshu, it's Mutar. Now, if you were to look at the Braisa itself, the truth is there's a lacuna in the Braisa. There's really a gap in the middle. Meaning, there are really three possible standards of urine. There is matpiach. There is, it's on the ground, it hasn't been absorbed, but it's not matpiach. And then there is absorbed. You might even say, there's absorbed, there might be four stages. If it's matpiach, if it makes your hand wet if you touch it, if you can sense that it's wet, but it's not matpiach, then if it is absorbed in the ground, but you can still see that something was absorbed, and finally, if you can't even see if something was absorbed, it might be that the middle two are really the same one. But the bottom line is, so let's even go with that hypothesis. Step one is it makes your hand wet. Step two is you can see that there was moisture there, but it won't make your hand wet. And number three is ingwi shumanika. You can't even tell that it was there. So when the Braisa says that something is oster, it says that number one is oster, if it makes your hand wet. When the Braisa says that something is mutter, it picks number three, which is if it's, at least that's what the Gemara assumes right now. Nivlu o yavshu is that it's nivlu like yavshu. Just like yavshu, you can't tell. It's totally dried out. So too nivlu, you can't tell. So even if you want to read the Braisa that way, there's a lacuna, there's a gap in the middle. They don't talk about case number two. Namely, rishuman is nikar, but it doesn't make your hand wet. But the Gemara, for some reason, ignores that. It ignores, for now, the first line in the Braisa and only focuses on the last line. So the Gemara says, my love, nivlu dunya diyavshu. Is it nivlu? When the Braisa says that in order for it to be mutter, it has to be nivlu or yavshu, presumably nivlu and yavshu are the equivalent. My yavshu the in yishuma nikar, just as when it evaporates off the stone. You don't know that there was ever urine there. So af nivlu the in yishuma nikar. That's what the Braisa would be saying. And therefore we can infer that from that. But ha rishuma nikar asur af agaf the imakir. They want to make an inference from the set. First thing they want to say, nivlu and yavshu are the same, totally unrecognizable. They want to infer from that anything more than that, namely rishuma nikar, you can see the impression, but it doesn't make your hand wet, is asur, and that would be against Rava's psa. My yavshu again da'i rishuma nikar, af nivlu den rishuma nikar, but ha rishuma nikar asur, af agav da'i makichen. So that's how the Gemara presents it as a question. So it is immediately the Gemara recognizes this very art. Ulitameh. Wait, ema resha, what do you do with the first part? The resha says, kos man shemak pichuru da asur. The resha says that urine is only asur when it will make your hand wet, but if it wouldn't make your hand wet, even though you can tell it was there, it's Rishuma Nikar, Harishuma Nikar Shari. So you have a contradiction between the first part of the Braisa and the second part of the Braisa. Because each one, neither one gives you the liminal case. They give you right next to the liminal case, and hence present opposite impressions of what you do with the liminal case. If I say A is no good, C is good, well, when I say A is no good, that implies that B is good. But when I say that C is good, it implies that B is no good. That's a standard type of an issue in what I'll call statutory interpretations of Braisos. So the Gemara therefore concludes, Elameha leka lamash lamine. You cannot infer anything from the Braisa because you would have to draw opposite inferences from the first statement as opposed to from the second statement. So now the Gemara just says, Lema kitanai, perhaps this debate, whether or not Rishumon Nikar, but it's not Matpiach, whether that's prohibited or permitted, it actually might be a machlokas satanoi. And again, as I say all the time, whenever the Gemara says lema kitanoi, the answer to the question is no. If the Gemara wants to have you conclude that a debate amongst the Amoraim maps perfectly to a debate amongst the Tanoim, the Gemara says kitanoi. And whenever the Gemara says lema or nema kitanoi, should we say that this machlokas corresponds to machlokas tanaim? By definition, the answer, as far as I know always, maybe there's an exception, the answer is no. They formulated the question because they're waiting for you to swat it down. So the Gemara says, lema kitanoi, perhaps this is the machlokas tanaim, kli shenishvuchu mimenu meiraglayim, also likros kriya shlakenegdo. We'll talk about this later or late on the next Talmud. This is a chamber pot. This is what we call an avit shalmei raglayim. For whatever reason, when it comes to urine, they call it an avit. When it comes to tzoa, to feces, they call it a gerech shel rei, as opposed to an avit shalmei raglayim. I don't know why. First thing it says is that that a kli shenishpachu mimenu mei raglayim, a vessel from which urine was poured out, meaning even though the urine was poured out, nonetheless, it's because it's used regularly as a chamber pot, it's worse than urine in a certain way. It's also to read Kriya Shema in its presence. When we get to Chavchem Beis, we'll talk more about some of the details about the Rishonim raised about this issue. But for the moment, that's not our issue. That's us. So forget the kli, forget the chamber pot. What about if the urine has been filled out? So nivlu mutar, lo nivlu asar. If they have been absorbed, it's mutar to read a Kriya Shema. Lo nivlu it's asar. Rabbi Yose Omer calls man shemat pich. Rabbi Yose says, as long as they are matpiach, you're not allowed to read Kriya Shema. So the Gemara wants to know, what is the debate here? What is the position of the Tanna Kamma? So the Gemara, and by the way, the Gemara is going to reject this, but the simple reading of the Braisa could very well be this way. My nivlu, umay lo nivlu dekamar Tanna Kamma. What did Tanna Kamma distinguish between whether they were absorbed or not absorbed? What was the distinction? Ilema nivlu means the matpichen and lo nivlu the matpichen. If the distinction of the Tanna Kamma is that lo nivlu, it means they still make your hand wet. But nivlu means they no longer do. And the Tanna Kamma says that it's only usur if it makes your hand wet, if it's matpichen. Then the usur Rabbi Yose lenemer kozman she matpichen hu da usur harishum anikar shari. Rabbi Yose comes along and says, if it's matpich, it makes your hand wet, it's usur. But if it's only that you can see that it's there, but it doesn't make your hand wet, it's mutter, hainu Tanna Kamma. It's the exact same opinion. Right? They're saying the exact same thing. Ela must be nivlu. When does the Tanna Kamma permit you to read Kriya Shema? Only if it's nivlu means to aid rishuma nikar. You can't recognize it. It's not just that it doesn't make your hand wet. It's that you can't tell anymore that it was there. But and lo nivlu means the rishuma nikar, and therefore it's usur. But the usur of Yisraelimer, no, it doesn't matter nivlu lo nivlu. If it doesn't make your hand wet, it's mutter. Kos men shematpichen hu da usur ha rishuma nikar ishari. So that's what the Gemara suggests, is actually the debate between Rabbi Yosef and the Chacham. And the truth is, on a pshat level, it probably is the simplest reading of the Braisa. But the Gemara says, lo, you can't necessarily prove that. The Chulei Alma, kol zman shemat pichen hu da asr, ha rishuma nikar shari. Everybody agrees that if it's only rishuma nikar, it will not make your hand wet. Everybody agrees that it's not a problem. So what do they argue about? The Hacha, turning over the page, b'tofeach amenas lahatiach ika beinayim. Here the debate is, everybody agrees that if it won't make your hand wet, it's mutter. The question is, what if it makes your hand a little bit moist, but your hand doesn't pick up enough moisture to make anything else moist? A second step. So the suggestion of the Gemara is, Rabbi Yose says, kol zman shematichen means it has to be able to make your hand tofeach al minas lahatpiach, wet so that it could wet something else. However, Tanna Kamma believes as long as it makes your hand wet, that would be sufficient. You might be wondering for a moment here, there are two questions that one would ask. The more obvious question to ask is, where did the Gemara come up with this chiluk from? Like all of a sudden, we pulled in from left field. Until now, we said that the distinction is, does it make your hand wet, does it not make your hand wet? Now we have two stages of making your hand wet. The second question, which might be less obvious, but also important, is why does the Gemara insist on ignoring the obvious possibility and instead going down this road? So I think that the answer to this, the answer to the second question, forgive me for answering chiastically, it's not what a chacham does. A chacham answers the first question first. But the answer to the second question, I think, is that the Gemara wants Rava's position to stand. Rava said that kozman shematichen is aser, but rishuman nikar is permitted, even though, as long as it doesn't make your hand wet. If you, in fact, read the Braisa the simple way, then Rava is adopting the minority position, namely that of Rabbi Yose. And he's disagreeing with the majority opinion, the Tanna Kamma. Whereas once you shift the positions of the Tanakhama Rabbi Yosef, you move each one down a step, then the Tanakhama's position is Kol Zman Shemafichim, which is exactly Rava's position. So that's why I think why the Gemara tries to force this reading into the Braisa. The second question is, which is my first question originally, is where did the Gemara come up with this chilek from? And the answer to that question is actually a Mishnah Maseches Edios. I don't know if it appears elsewhere in Shas, but in Maseches Edios, there is a discussion between one of the debates between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, and there seems to be a question of when a mashke is still considered a mashke. And the Mishnah is in Perek Dalid Mishnah Vav. I don't want to go into the details what it's related to, but the Gemara, it's in one of these cases where Beis Shammai is actually lenient. And Beis Hillel says, Mashke Tofeach, Beis Shammai requires much more liquid than Beis Shammai, than Beis Hillel, whatever this case is. Beis Hillel says it's enough if there's Mashke Tofeach. And Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mishum Beis Hillel, Rabbi Yehuda records Beis Hillel's opinion as Tofeach Umat Piach. Now, even Beis Hillel would say that if there's enough Mashke only to make your hand wet, that's insufficient. Whatever the purposes are there, it has to be, they agree that it has to be at least tofeach umatpiach. So that's at least one place in Tanaitic literature where that dispute clearly comes up between Tanakama and that Mishnah and Rabbi Huda as to what Beis Hillel's opinion is, tofeach or tofeach umatpiach. And that's the distinction that the Gemara borrows here in order to present the machlokas to Tanakama and Rabbi Yosei as not being one of Rishumon Nikar versus Matpiach, rather of Matpiach versus Tofeach Umatpiach. Or as the Gemara, Tofeach Almanas Lahatpiach.
Rabbi?
Yes.
How did you know about that minute? How would one know about that?
Well, if I'm going to be very honest with you, Josh, it's because I wrote my PhD dissertation on Maseches Edios. So I read those Mishnayos in manuscript and in other forms tens and tens of times. Otherwise, I don't know. I don't think any of the Rishonim comment here. I will say, I mean, this is the real answer to your question. I suspect, but I don't know Mishnayos Taros as well, despite having learned them and taught them. I suspect that Tofeach Umatpiach comes up somewhere in places Mishnayos in Seder Taros. And so, the Mishnah in Edios that I just cited to you its topic belongs to Taros. I suspect that distinction appears there in a few places. I could be wrong. And if you learned enough Mishnayos, then you would know that. That's not a criticism, but obviously lots of people have learned a lot of Mishnayos. They still haven't learned Seder Taros. Seder Taros is the thing you leave for last. So the answer is that's the only way. If the Rishonim don't tell you, the only way to know it is by knowing Mishnayos. But in this case, I won't claim such bekias. It just happens to be my dissertation, Mesechta. So, okay. Anyway. So the Gemara, I'll add one personal note, Josh. I appreciated that question deeply because as a Talmud, I was always bothered by that kind of question. How did he know? And sometimes the answer is the person knew because they knew everything. And sometimes the person knew just because they got to the next stop before you did. So, and there's a range of things in between. But yes, it's a fair question. And I think the answer ranges. All right. So we get a very, very brief break from the bathroom stuff. We're going to come back to it. We're not done. We get a break to go back to the next line in the Mishnah, which is Yarad Litpol. So it's been a long time since we read the Mishnah, so I'm just going to reread. If you want, you can look back, but it's just a quick line in the Mishnah. On Chafes and the Beis, after the first line, Yarad Litpol, that's the second wide line in the Gemara, on Chafes and the Beis. Yarad Litpol, if a person went down to immerse him or herself, but let's say, for the moment, let's say himself in the mikvah, if a person would have enough time to finish their immersion and to get out of the water, lalos, to cover themselves up and then to read Kriya Shema before sun rises, yale, v'yiskase, v'yikra. He should get out of the water, put on his bathrobe, put on the towel, whatever it is, and read Kriya Shema. But vim lav, if there isn't enough time, Yiskasa b'mayim v'yikra. He should cover himself, meaning just rely upon the water as a cover. Now, the Gemara is going to focus on two aspects here. The first one is, Zman Kriya Shema. I very rarely remember to do this, but I think that one of the things we did learn already in, I think, the first parak, that I've never been careful about, but should be more careful about, is, you know, when people come to shul, sometimes davening, especially during the summer, let's say KJ, the main minyan davens at 9 o'clock. And, Zman Kriya Shema, maybe by 9:15, 9:20 or something like that. And it's very possible that you won't reach Kriya Shema before the Zman. So what we tell people to do, of course, is, well, read Kriya Shema now, right? So right at the beginning of davening, read Kriya Shema, eat without the brachos, and then the brachos you can certainly say in after Zman Kriya Shema at least one more hour, at least into the end of the fourth hour. So I think it's pretty common. Your shul sometimes will get up and make an announcement before, the night before, so Zman Kriya Shema tomorrow morning is X, so remember to say Kriya Shema before. The truth is, l'chatchila, one should say Kriya Shema, even if you're not davening, you're full davening, before sunrise, before Hanetzach Hama. And for some people, depending, for most parts of the year, it might not be an issue because they're not up and I wouldn't bother anybody. But I know for myself personally, I would say pretty much every day, even in the earliest summer months, I'm up long before Hanetzach Hama, and I don't often remind myself, but really, even though I'm not going to daven, let's say, with a minion until 7:30, 8 o'clock, whatever it is, I should say Kriya Shema before Hanetzach Hama, right? Because it does seem to be the l'chatchila zman, the most preferable zman. I should say it's mitzvah min hamocha. It's certainly a mitzvah min hamocha. It's ideal. We have at the Paskin, l'chatchila, you're allowed to daven even, say Kriya Shema, and your yotzei l'chatchila in the first 3 hours of the day. But there's certainly a mitzvah in a mochar of saying Kriya Shema before sunrise. So if you know, let's say you get up very early, or today, sunrise in New York City was probably about 7:18, 7:19 or something like that. So if you happen to be up at 7 o'clock, and you remember, you could say Kriya Shema then. So the Gemara here says, the Mishnah, by the way, note the standard in the Mishnah. The Mishnah said that the litmus test is, do you say Kriya Shema in the water or do you climb out of the water? All depends whether you can finish Kriya Shema before Hanetzach Hama. So the Gemara says, Lema Tana Samak Rabbi Eliezer Dama Hanetzach Hama. Because Rabbi Eliezer's position, even though we don't paskin like that ultimately, is that the end Zman Kriya Shema is sunrise, which for us would be crazy because we live out by the clock, not by the sun. But for them, it wasn't so difficult to say Kriya Shema before Hanetzach Hama because most people were up before Hanetzach Hama. So the Gemara says, the Sa Mishnah, the fact that the Mishnah just assumed en passant, right, just in passing, that the time you've got to get out of the water and finish your Shema by, I mean get covered up, is Hanetzach Hama. So you see, the Mishnah is assuming Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. So Lema Tana Stamak Rabbi Eliezer Dama Hanetzach Hama. So the Gemara says, now, Afilu Tem Rabbi Yeshua, the Dilma Ki Vasikin, the Amar Rabbi Yochanan Vasikin, how you go Mera Sama Hanetzach Hama. So Rabbi Yochanan actually, remember, and I think we pointed this out, there are two elements to reading Kriya Shema before Hanetzach Hama. Number one is ideally you do it right before Hanetzach Hama, and then you say Gal Yisrael, and then right after sunrises, you daven. So that's the perfect. But I think that there's still an issue of saying Kriya Shema before Hanetzach Hama if you do it 30 minutes before. You won't get smichas, you're not supposed to daven, then you're not supposed to daven until after sunrise. So the truth is you're not saying Berachas Kriya Shema, so you'll be so much cooler to see you later. But Kriya Shema, it would seem, is supposed to be said ideally before sunrise. Okay. Anyway, so the Gemara says our Mishnah, in fact, is not the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer necessarily. It could be even Rabbi Yeshua's opinion, because still, right, you see in the Mishnah, that there's an ideal of saying the whole Kriya Shema before Hanetzach Hama. Okay. Next. Now, the Mishnah then said, Vimla, if you don't have enough time to get up, to get out of the water, to put on your bathrobe, to say Kriya Shema, Yiskasa B'mayim V'yikra, cover yourself in the water. Now, that's a little tricky, because what does it mean to cover yourself in the water? Right? Any of you who've gone to any modern mikvah, I don't mean a mud hole in the ground, but a standard mikveh that is not unpleasant to immerse oneself in. So you realize immediately there should be a problem that the Gemara doesn't even deal with, which is we wouldn't say that at first glance, we wouldn't say that a person who is in the water with their head above the water is covered up, because they're not covered up. But the Gemara doesn't ask that question. The Gemara says on the sixth line, Bahare Libo Roes Erva. You're assuming that you're immersed to your shoulders, your heart and your private parts are in the same space, in the same space in the clear water. They can affect, see one another. That's Libo Roes Erva. So the Gemara answers, Amar Abelezer, Alazar, V'itemer Racha or Abba Bar Acha, Mishum Rabbeinu, the name of, I presume, either Rabbi Tanasi or Raz. The Mayim Achurim Shanu, it has to be cloudy water. And I said, it's muddy water. And the Damu Ka'ara Snechva, it's like thick earth. Shelo Yira, Libo Ervaso. Imagine, you know how Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and his son, Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Shimon, when they were in the cave for however many years they were in the cave for, when they were in the cave and they learned, what did they do? The Gemara and Shabbos says they didn't want to wear out their clothing. So they would take off their clothing, bury themselves in the sand, and they would learn all day that way. When they needed to daven, I believe, is when they would put their clothing on. Now, I don't care about the story per se, but as a halachic reflection, it's true. If you're in sand, then there's no libo ra'as erba because it's solid ground. But if you're in water, the lake can see the erba. So the Gemara's answer is you cloud the water. The Rabbeinu Yonah asks a question here. Forget libo ra'as erba. You can be ra'as erba. You just look down. So what Rabbeinu Yonah says is very interesting. He says that if you're looking down, yes, it would have been a problem, but you don't have to look down. And since under the water is a different place than where your eyes are, if your eyes are in a different place and you're not looking, that's not a problem. The Gemara didn't think that was a problem. It's only an issue when it comes to your lathe, which is in the same space, the same clear space as the erva under the water, then it's a problem. Now, what's very interesting to me, and I haven't seen any of the Rishonim discuss it, and it just hit me now, is that there should be another solution to the problem, which is that why don't you just stand above the water where your heart is above the water? So then your lathe can't be roeth. Your lathe is not actually looking. Your lathe doesn't look at anything. Your lathe doesn't see the air, but it's not in the same place as the air, but neither are your eyes. You look up that way. So why the Gemara doesn't suggest that, I have no idea. There is another very important question which touches upon something halach lemaisa, which I'm not going to talk about this week. If people are really that interested in giving share in it, I could go on a digression in one of the coming weeks before we end this whole sukkah. There is a discussion in Rishonim whether this piece is applicable to women. We've spoken about it previously, that because a man's erva protrudes but a woman's does not, there are sometimes fewer concerns with a woman and her own erva as opposed to a man and his own erva. So there are Rishonim, I believe, who will say here that there's no, for a woman, this wouldn't be a problem in the water. Liba roa to erva, because her erva doesn't protrude, and it's not a problem with her own eyes, just as it's not a problem for a man. Now, why is that so significant? Because if that were the case, then it shouldn't be a problem with a woman making a bracha when she's immersed in the mikvah. If it's her head, presumably is above the water because it's hard to make a bracha with your head under the water. But as soon as she sticks her head out, now I know that it's often, I don't know if there are any women who do that, but I know that there are all sorts of crazy practices that emerge when you make the bracha, how many times you dip, but women coming out of the mikvah to put on a robe in order to make the bracha. Or do you, while you're robed, before you go to the mikvah, make the bracha. So, but this issue here is directly pertinent. Does this question of libo roes erva, when immersed in the water, does that apply to women or not? Because if it doesn't, then you solve the whole bracha problem. I mean, there's still a bracha problem. The question is, do you make the bracha before you immerse or after you immerse? But at least you don't have to get out of the mix for that. Okay. I won't ask now. I suspect that there is no universal minhag. I'm not going to ask a public survey of what the women do. But nonetheless, I don't think the minhag is universal. Okay. Now, the Gemara continues, Tana Rabbana, Mayim Tzlulim, this is the last narrow line in the Gemara, Mayim Tzlulim, Yeshev Bohem Ad Savaro, Vikore. V'yeshom Rim Ochra Merazo. So here we have a debate. Let's say you have Mayim Tzlulim, clear water, not cloudy. What should you do? So the Gemara suggests, you immerse yourself up until your neck in water, and then you read Kriya Shema. The Yesh Omrim, that's not good. Ofer Marag, but you have to stir up the mud on the bottom to make the water cloudy. The Gemara says, V'tanakama harei libo roes ha'erva. So the Gemara says, so that's exactly what we avoided in the Mishnah. The Gemara says, Kasabar libo roes ha'erva mutter. The Tanakama of this Brisa says there is no problem of libo roes ha'erva. And we've mentioned this before. This is a debate. It's an achlokas of Rishon had a paskin. I believe the Shulchan Aruch quotes two opinions. The first opinion is that it's prohibited. Libo roa es ha'erva is a problem. The second opinion is more lenient. So that's actually explicitly a debate in this brisa. I'll make this point again, and I haven't seen any of the Rishonim comment, and I must be missing something obvious. Notice the Tanakama didn't say immerse up until your waist in water, which would have solved the problem of libo roa es ha'erva, the way I'm presenting it. He said you submerge until your neck. So I'm not really sure why. It's like you don't want your chest exposed. So I'm not really sure where that's coming from, because what we have spoken about previously, explicitly, is that if a person is not wearing a shirt, a person has no top on, but they're wearing a belt and clothing on the bottom, you're allowed to read Kriya Shema for yourself in private. Right? Only for davening do you have to wear something on top. So I'm not really sure what the issue is here. And I haven't seen, to be shown him, comment on why Yeshiv Bamhem Ad Savaro. Okay.
My Gemara says that there's a Be'er Hagra on Arachayim that talks about the Vatikin would immediately say Shemona Esrei, and for Shemona Esrei, you want to have your heart covered. So that was his kind of...
Yeah, but you see, that's very interesting, because he thinks that the Gra thinks that you're davening when you're in the water? That's fascinating. Thank you. I don't know why I didn't merit this Be'er Hagra. But I don't see that sometimes there are Hagos Hagra on the side. But now he has not, Hagos Hagra doesn't have anything.
This is an English,
Okay. There you go. So that's really interesting. But again, that would explain why you have to have your chest covered, but that would suggest that he's davening in the water, which I guess on a technical level, somehow it seems that's not appropriate as Omei Lefnei Melech. But on a technical level, it's not Libo Roes Erba. His chest isn't uncovered. So maybe there you go. Maybe that's the assumption here. That's pretty wild. I would never have thought that, but okay. So then the Gemara asks what is going to seem at first to you a very odd question. Vare Akeva Roa Esa Erba. Your heel, the bottom of your foot sees the Erba. So I guess the question is, so what? Now, the conclusion of the Gemara, we're going to pass to that's Muslim. But there seems to be this idea that your important Devarim, and I wouldn't think that your foot is quite as important as your heart, is somehow, is a problem. In other words, this requires an explanation. When a person, no matter what a person does, there's a part of their body essentially that always sees the Erva, right? The tops of their thighs are almost always the Makom Erva. So why doesn't the Gemara ask that? So the assumption behind the Gemara seems to be that something that normally would not be able to have a direct line of sight to your Erva when you would be wearing normal clothing, maybe that's a problem of Roes Erva. Now I have to tell you, I find this to be very, very odd. Because in the time of the Gemara, remember, people did not wear underwear. But you might have had people wear a loincloth, but even a loincloth didn't have something that went underneath the body. It was, in other words, the concern is that your robe or your skirts, man or woman, would blow up or something like that in the air. So then you had a loincloth that was wrapped around starting, you know, just above your waist, going down a certain distance on your thighs that would still provide coverage. But typically speaking, there was no part that was in effect underneath that would have prevented your akev, your heel, your ankle, the bottom of your foot from seeing the erva. So I'm not really sure why that's an issue. But the Gemara asks, Hare akevo roes erva? The Gemara answers, Kasavar akevo roes erva mutter, which is about to present as an achlokes. We're certainly going to pass them leniently. But the reason why it's not a problem of being in the water and reading Kriya Shema, if it's clear water according to the Tanakama, libo roes erva is not a problem, and apparently akevo roes erva is not a problem. The Gemara says on the third medium with line, Itmar, akevo roes erva is mutter. It's mutter if your akev is roes erva. But what if it's nogea? What if it's touching? You know, your feet are folded up, and therefore a part of your anatomy that normally would never touch your private parts now is. And this seems to be, this team, Tosus writes that the reason why this might be a problem, the small little Tosus, the second one, the time in the Gazrina Nogea, Akevo, Shema Yigabiyada. We don't want anything, touching your erva that doesn't normally touch it, because maybe you'll be touching it with your hands, and if you're touching it with your hands, that's really a problem. Now, why is that a problem? I presume because it means you won't be focused on that which you're supposed to be focused on. So the Gemara says, Itmar, Akevo Roes Erva Mutter, Nogea, what if it's touching? Abai Omer Aser Varava Arma Mutter. This is one presentation of the Machlokas Abai and Rava, where everybody is lenient on the sight line, but they argue about whether or not I assume it's your legs are folded, and they're Nogea in the Erva. Rav Zvid must be the Lala Hashmai Tahachi. Rav Zvid presented the debate between Abai and Rava differently, more stringently. That Hachi, Rav Chinina, Bered Ravika, I'm sorry, what we just read was Rav Zvid. Rav Chinina, Bered Ravika, Master Lahachi. Rav Chinina presents it more stringently. Nogea is the Vera Kalasa. Everybody agrees if your foot is touching the Erva, it's prohibited. Roa, what if there is a sight line? Abai Amar Asar, Rava Amar Mutar. Lo nitna Torah, lamal chasharis. The Torah wasn't giving for the ministry of angels. It's very difficult for people to avoid that. And the conclusion of the Gemara is Vehilchasa, Nogea is Asar, and Roa is Mutar. So, again, it doesn't matter which lashon. The bottom line is we're stringent on when there's physical contact. We're not worried about re'iyah. Okay. The Gemara, I'll read just a little further in the Gemara. The Gemara says, Amar Rava, we mentioned this Gemara last week. So Abba Shashis is Mutar, Mutar Likros Kriya Shema Kenegda. Erva Abba Shashis, also Likros Kriya Shema Kenegda. So suppose that you have like a glass, something you can see through. If there is soa there, it's permissible to read Kriya Shema. Whereas when it comes to an erva, which whatever erva it is, it's prohibited. Why? So the Gemara explains. Soa b'kisu italia milsa v'hamechasya. Soa is dependent upon whether it's covered. And if there's glass as a barrier, then it's covered. How do you know that soa is dependent upon covering? Because the Torah says, v'shavta v'chisisa es tzeyasecha. The Torah uses the language of covering it up. However, erva ba'shashis, asa likros kriya shma kinega, v'lo yir evacha ervastavar, want to make sure I got that right, v'lo yir evacha ervastavar, amarachmana v'ha kamitachsia. You can see it, and that's enough. And on a more pshat level, leaving aside the Gemara's drashos, the reason why you're not allowed to read Kriya Shema Kenega to Erva is because it's going to distract you. I mean, I should say that. That's not so, I scratch that. That's someone else's Erva. Your own Erva, scratch what I just said. So bottom line is it depends upon Ri'ya. It's visibility. Okay.
Why is there not a component of smell? It's not visible, but you smell it because you're around the corner from it. A wall is separating you. You don't see it. There's no discussion of scent, of smell.
Not here, right? But I think the assumption is you don't smell it, right? In other words, we've seen other cases. Let's say I'm sitting here, and there's a 10-tfachim pillar next to me, and there's so on top of it. So it's mutter to read Kriya Shema because it's in a separate makom. But as I think the Rambam says explicitly, provided you can't smell it. Right? In other words, there are two different issues here. There's one is that I'm in the same place as soa, and peacefully takes care of that. But then there's the smell issue. Okay, so Abaye, Amar Abaye, Soa Koshu Mavatla Barok. Abaye says that there's a very tiny amount of excrement. If you can spit on top of it and the spit covers it, that's sufficient. Amar Rava Ubarok Ava, with thick, the saliva has to be thick enough that it's really a covering. There is a Yushalmi that's all the Rishonim quote in the Shulchan Aruch quote, that this only helps you for a short amount of time, because eventually the rope is going to either dry up or sort of disappear, and therefore the soul will be visible again. So even though Abai and Rava say what they say, it means for a very limited time. Next, Amar Rava, Soa Beguma, supposing there's a hole in the ground and there's excrement in it. So Rava says, Maniach Sandalo Allah V'Korei Kriyashva. If you step on the hole, covering up the tzoah, you can read Kriyas Shmoneh, because now it's in a different place, covered up. Then the Gemara says, ah, but tzoah dvuka v'sandalo mai. Now there's a machlokas of Rishonim how to read this. Some Rishonim say that this is not related to the previous case. Some Rishonim say that if you put your foot on top of the excrement in the little ditch in the ground, the little guma on the ground, it doesn't matter whether your sandal is touching it or not. It's in a different place that the barrier is fine. That the question of the Gemara is a separate question here. Supposing it's not in a barrier. Supposing there's just some, on the bottom of your shoe, there's some stuff stuck. Is that a problem? And the Gemara's answer, teiku, and therefore, because it's a sfeika d'oraisa, we are stringent. The Rambam seems to understand that no, that this is actually that case. It's one thing to put your shoe on top of a hole with its excrement inside, providing your shoe is not touching it. But once your shoe is touching it, the Gemara is wondering, well, even though it's covered up because it's attached to you, maybe that's a problem. And the Gemara's answer was teiku. And again, the same halacha will apply, that because it's a doubtful issue and something that is potentially a d'oraisa prohibition, it is not permitted. I would imagine, I haven't seen it discussed, that if there were urine in the guma, then this wouldn't be a problem, both covering it with your shoe and even if your shoe was somehow touching it, because it's a suffix, teiku, the question stands, and therefore we might be lenient on it. I doubt that case probably doesn't come up so easily, but nonetheless. Okay. Any questions? Okay. So in the coming highlights, next week, is the next few lines in the Gemara are going to be a little bit disturbing and rather interesting. It's an interesting halachic literature that emerges on a related topic, which we'll talk about next week. Okay. Any questions?
Thank you.
Okay.